Last summer, Beyoncé released an album called The Lion King, The Gift. It was based around Disney's remake of The Lion King, a film that included voice acting from Beyoncé herself, among many others. Last Friday on Disney Plus, Beyoncé released a movie-length video that's meant to serve as a companion to the album. It's called Black is King. It's visually grand and sumptuous, and it's got a huge cast. You'll see Lupita Nyong'o, Pharrell Williams, Kelly Rowland, and many looks at Beyoncé's children, her mother, and her husband, Jay-Z. I'm Stephen Thompson. Today, we are talking about Black is King on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere. Check on the account balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money on the go. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. Joining us from her home in Brooklyn is Soraya Nadia McDonald, culture critic for The Undefeated. Welcome back, Soraya.
Hello again.
It's great to have you here. And joining us from San Antonio, we have writer Kiana Fitzgerald. Hi, Kiana.
Hey, Stephen. Good to be back.
Oh, it's just great to have you both. So Black is King is actually Beyoncé's third visual album. She made movie-length companions to her self-titled 2013 record, as well as 2016's Lemonade. But the earlier films were released concurrently with the albums themselves. We're actually seeing Black is King a year after these songs originally came out. Black is King and The Lion King, The Gift, both highlight many guest performers, including African stars such as Yemi Alade, Shatta Wale, Wizkid, Tiwa Savage, Busiswa, Mr. Easy, and more. Kiana, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of Black is King?
I thought it was visually arresting. I think it's really, really beautiful. The colors are gorgeous. The dancing is amazing. But I'm left wondering, how am I supposed to feel about this? And by that, I mean, as you mentioned, this project came out a full year ago, you know, the audio form of it. And I feel like it would have really benefited the project itself had it been released concurrently, because the songs themselves are not stale, but they don't hit as hard as they could have if it had come out at the same time. So I think overall, it's a very pretty project. I'm still wondering, like, how do I feel about it, though?
Sarai, what do you think?
You know, I actually, for me, this helped me sort of appreciate that album more. Listening to it, I couldn't necessarily like find a groove, I felt like, because it's interrupted by so many voiceovers or story interludes to tie it to the film. I found myself like getting annoyed. Like I just wanted to go from track to track to track. And so with the film, like it's so like visually lush, it actually made me appreciate the album more. Like weirdly, like looking at the images, I felt like I could hear the music better, if that makes any sense at all. But she has like this, you know, well-established penchant for just really inspired art direction. And, you know, after Lemonade, I did kind of wonder, like, where else is there to go? You know, she's already sort of like pulled in like these filmic traditions from people like Julie Dash. And she's done so much instantly sort of iconic work with Melina Matsoukas, you know, who she's collaborated with a number of times. And yet this does kind of like visually take things to another level. I kind of feel like I would have rather seen this than like the live action remake of Lion King in theaters.
I agree.
There's something about Lion King, or I think that particular version, not the hand-drawn animation, which I love. And, you know, like we've already sort of talked a lot about sort of like the uncanny valley-ness of that particular iteration. And I think basically I was like, okay, so it's like Hamlet, but dumb with animals. And Black is King to me at least feels like more than that, even though like that's what it's basically sort of building upon. But mostly you just sort of get subsumed in just like image after image after image.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction to it, and I agree with both of you. I think that visually arresting is a really good word for the visuals. Overall, the experience, though, felt like a little bit of a branding exercise for everybody involved. It felt like a branding exercise for Beyoncé and a branding exercise for Disney. And the Disneyfication, the kind of interaction between the imagery that Beyoncé's putting out there and the imagery and storytelling of The Lion King made it feel a little bit like what you would see on an IMAX screen in a Beyoncé exhibit at Epcot Center. That, to me, made it feel like really a lesser cousin to visual albums like the 2013 one or Lemonade, which managed to combine that great art direction with storytelling that felt really personal. And this, to me, didn't feel as personal and didn't feel as specific as I would have liked.
Yeah, I think that's what I couldn't put my finger on. I think it's exactly that, Stephen.
Yeah, which is interesting because more than like those previous two projects, like we certainly see more of her family, you know, certainly Blue Ivy than we do in the other ones. And yet there's a distance to this one, perhaps because she's not telling a story that is ostensibly about herself. It's almost like a concept album.
Yeah, and if it's a concept album, it's a concept album in a way about like Black triumph. And I'm wondering what you guys think of the timing of this, because I think the initial reaction was very like, this is extremely well-timed. This is following months of Black Lives Matter protests in the wake of George Floyd's death. The story here is very centered entirely on like, you are descended from kings. It's not necessarily speaking to the moment. Did you feel that way, or how did you take that?
I don't know. That is definitely the focus. And usually I find that approach a little off-putting because it's so easy for it to veer into satire. So my favorite aunt is my Aunt Cornelia, who I have like written about before. One of the things that she did when she was alive was she raised a bunch of money to take a group of kids who all lived in this housing project in Durham, North Carolina, and bring them to New York to see The Lion King on Broadway. And was hoping that seeing basically like this explosion of color and imagination would give them sort of a larger sense of themselves than just, I'm from like this ugly neighborhood in this part of the city that like nobody cares about in a state that like nobody talks about. And so like while I was watching, I was like, oh, Beyoncé has sort of gotten to that point where, and I think, you know, becoming a mother probably like factors into this, right? And thinking about like raising Black children, even if they are like absurdly wealthy, privileged Black children, in a world that is so hostile to them, that you want to be able to provide something that says, look at how glorious we are, right? Like, look at this tradition that you come from. There is something that is just so gorgeous about it. And the spirituality that she is clearly trying to connect with, that I can sort of deeply respect because, and I think you get this from Blitz Bazulowe's direction, like if you've seen The Burial of Kojo, this idea that we have been sort of exploring, I think for the past few years now, when it comes to Afrofuturism, right, that we usually associate with Janelle Monáe, like that is what sort of springs to mind when I'm looking at Black is King. Like, let me just spend a ton of money to tell you Black children how awesome you are.
I wanted to speak to the element of this film coming out during this time. For me, there were some really striking moments in this film. And one of them I wrote down was when a male character or representative says, our brothers and sisters are walking around with crowns in their back pockets because of an environment of repression. So that to me really, really like screamed out at me. And I was like, oh, okay, so that directly connects to the moment that we're going through right now. And another moment that really struck me, even though Brown Skin Girl has been out for a year now, it wasn't until I actually visually saw Naomi Campbell and Kelly Rowland and Lupita Nyong'o like standing there with their beautiful brown skin that it really hit me in the chest. And I just started crying. And I was like, I can't believe I'm crying right now, but I really did. It was a really, really striking and powerful moment. So I think that this film in some ways does speak to the aspects of, you know, we're in a moment of civil unrest and we're trying our best to like galvanize our strength and our support in our community. But there are some other moments that I think are more far reaching. And in those ways, they can hit the mark. And in some ways, I think it's a bigger target than her film is able to really strike, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like I was watching this film and I was thinking, like, who exactly is this for? And I definitely felt you were saying, Soraya, about kids being brought to The Lion King. And I felt like in some ways this is being pitched to kids. This is being pitched to young viewers and sort of feeding their sense of self-worth and their value. And at the same time, I was very frustrated by the fact that this movie is, to me, completely inexplicably rated TV-14.
Oh, that's so strange.
As near as I can tell, it's because Beyoncé is wearing a lot of kind of low-cut, tight-fitting outfits, but why on earth would you limit a movie like this to 14 and up? I felt like so much of it felt like it was being pitched to like 8, 9, 10-year-old fans of The Lion King. And I hope that parents who are interested in showing this to their young kids, who I think could really appreciate it, I hope they're not put off by that TV 14 rating, which I just found bizarre.
Particularly in comparison to like other work that she's done, I don't think she's particularly sexualized at all. If anything, like she is very much sort of like stepping into this role as like mother, right?
Exactly.
Like there's all of these images of her sort of like inserting herself into the role of the Madonna. God, that's bizarre.
I can't figure it out. I'm sitting here like going over the film again in my brain, like what moment could it have been? Like, I really have no clue why they have that designation. But like you said, Stephen, I'm hoping that parents will see past it and still choose to share this with their children.
Among other things, this movie is basically a collection of videos held together by interstitials, some of which I think work better than others. I found myself really pulled out of it every time you would get like Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen voicing dialogue about Hakuna Matata in between these songs. But it is in many ways a collection of videos. What video or videos do you guys think like kind of worked best for you from this film?
I loved the Already video. I believe that's the song with Shatta Wale and Major Lazer. Only the king, king, you know it. King already, already, you know it. Top everything, everything, you know it. King already, already, you know it. My body so got a king body. Body gon' shine, bling, bling body. Calling all the shots, ring, ring body. Crown on your head, got a king body. Only the king, you a king, you know it. King already, my baby, you know it. Everything, everything, you know it. King already, already, you know it. Shine already, it's time already. That video to me was so much fun, especially the moments where it was clear that it was a very candid, free-flowing moment of Beyoncé just kind of with this group, this mob of people just having a good time. Those were the moments where I was like, that's the Beyoncé I love to see. And she shows it so sparingly because she knows that we are people who are like holding on to every last image and word that she says, and anything that we can get of her outside of her perfected element, I think we just soak up. So that video for me was really, really fun.
It really is like you have like these snatches. Like there's one image where she's wearing this like completely blinged out grill. Mm. So first you've got like this little kid and the white butler like comes along to like brush his teeth. Mm-hmm. And then like in the next cut after that, you see her with basically like diamond teeth.
Yes.
And then the same butler like brushing her teeth. And she just gives you this little like smile, this just winking smile. And I'm just like, like those moments when you see her sense of humor comes out are so fun to me.
Yeah.
And the other thing that she does, though, I think, is that she indulges her own fantasies. And so, like, there's this moment where, for whatever reason, it's not really explained, but there's just a synchronized swimming team. And all of a sudden, like, Beyoncé is Esther Williams. And you're just like, why not? Sure.
Yeah, I think my favorite moment of this, my favorite video in this, would be For My Power. That song brings in a lot of energy from outside forces, people like Yemi Alade and Tierra Whack. And like, yeah. It's about an hour and 10 minutes into this movie, and you suddenly get this real jolt. Like you were saying, Soraya, about the little bits of humor, I really appreciated any time this movie picked up its own energy a little bit. I was imagining, you know, they launched it at 3 a.m. Eastern time, and I knew people who were waiting up to watch it, and I was thinking, how are you going to stay awake until 4:30 in the morning with this movie, which in some ways can be very subdued and slow-moving. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that all of a sudden you just had that burst of energy that I love in a lot of my favorite Beyoncé songs.
Like, people stayed up to watch Homecoming, like the stream of Homecoming from Coachella.
Yes.
I remember that. And I respect and appreciate her ability to create like a moment of must-see TV that people still actually watch at the same time all together, particularly when everything is basically on demand at this point. But I am also old at this point. And I was just like, yeah, I can't stay up that late. I will be helpful to no one.
Yeah, I was someone who was like, it'll be there when I get up. Like, you know, I'm not in a rush. Even when Homecoming streamed, I wasn't one of the people who stayed up all night. I was just kind of like, you know, I'll get to it when I get to it. And when I do, I will live tweet it and I will have a good time by myself. And I did exactly that. So I didn't get a chance to live tweet my experience this time. And I haven't really been on Twitter. So I'm interested to like hop on and see the reactions that people are kind of spilling out at this point.
Yeah, well, by the time this episode drops, Black is King will have been out 5 days. So the audience, I'm sure, will have had tons of time to process it. Well, we want to know what you think about Black is King. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. This is a pleasure.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all on Friday when we'll be talking about the wonderful new Starz series, P-Valley.
Until recently, Edmund Hong says he didn't speak out against racism because he was scared.
My parents told me not to speak up because they were scared. I'm tired of this.
Listen now on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.